Zoom it. Didn't want anybody to hear me munching my Cheetos when they listen to the recording on Briarwood.
All right, let's open with prayer. Lord, guide our discussion tonight as we hear a lament for the destruction of Israel. And we just feel Amos's pain as he knows what is coming and he looks around and he's thinking a lot of these people are not going to survive and there is nothing he can do to stop this. What anguish he must have felt staring that in the face. Invite the Holy Spirit to be with us during our lesson tonight and to that we have a spirited discussion about chapter 5. Amen.
Amen.
So Jane was asking where everybody got on, if it gets any better. And sadly, it doesn't. You know, that's unfortunately, you know, when you're reading the Minor Prophets, kind of the view. I took a class, and this has probably been about 20 years ago, where we did all of the prophets in the course of about 6 months. And by the end of that, I'm like, just go into exile. I am done. You know, I was so depressed.
I bet.
back to back hearing of all the sins. You're just like ready and enough already. All right, chapter 5. So it's a funeral dirge, a.k.a. lament. And how does Amos describe Israel in verses 1 through 3?
I had, the thing that struck me out is a fallen virgin. And I just thought, you know, that was very descriptive. Never to rise again, deserted, no one to lift her up. 1,000 march out, only 100 left. And then 100 march out and only 10 will be left. And then, and the note, I saw a note in my thing. It said, Amos shocked his listeners by singing a song of grief for them as if they had already been destroyed. Israelites believed their wealth and religious ritual would make them secure, that Amos lamented their sure destruction.
Good. Very good. All right. So in verses 4 through 6, what does God urge Israel to do?
And
how did Isaiah explain what this meant?
I've got seek and live and, you know, don't seek the idols and the places where they, don't go to the places where the idols were.
And I put down seek him and live and those who keep Sabbath, love God, will enter his house of prayer. But then they, when they sacrificed to God, as they call it, they didn't actually sacrifice to God.
Yep. If they seek God, he will have compassion. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're going to die in the wrath of God's judgment. Although, you know, we already saw in chapter 4, he's already said, I'm done, right? I'm done. All right. So if they don't heed the words of the Lord, what will happen to Israel?
They'll be exiled. There'll be nothing left.
What's going to happen to their places of worship?
Destroyed.
Destroyed. Yep. All right, moving on to question 4. Then Amos uses the term the house of Joseph to refer to Israel. What did you learn about why that name came about?
Okay, it's because Jacob blessed Joseph's sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, which are Gilgal, Gal, and Bethel, with the land that Israel now occupied during Amos' time. So it's the house of Joseph.
Right. So they were in the northern kingdom. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So in verses 7 through 12, there are a number of charges that God makes against the northern kingdom. Who wants to list those for us?
He said there's not genuine righteousness. Truth is suppressed. The poor are oppressed. They take bribes, and they deprive the poor of justice and oppress the righteous.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody kind of look up Wormwood to understand what he meant by that statement in verse 7?
Well, Wormwood means bitterness.
Yeah. It was a very bitter plant, which is really interesting because they used it for medicinal purposes. So can you imagine, you know, having to take something that tasted really, really bitter? And it also can be poisonous, too, like many medicines, parts of it are.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, the theme of the charges are all about injustice. So why is justice so important to a nation?
That was really hard to come up with words to say that. God likes justice. He wants us to love our neighbor. And that's everybody, not just the rich people. And it makes things work better.
Yeah, good. You know, if there's no justice, the moral fiber of society falls apart. People become disillusioned, and they have no compulsion to do what is right.
I think it would make the poor want to go steal something. And, you know, I mean, why would they want to go along with it? They would want to go find something to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. Think about what happened in the summer of 2020 and 2021 in the U.S.
The are you referring to COVID?
No, not COVID.
Okay,
about George Floyd and the riots over George Floyd.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
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 You know, there was no justice here, so we're going to riot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real prime example there.
And it's getting worse. Sorry.
Okay, so what if Exodus 23, verses 1 through 3 and 6 through 8 say about justice?
You shall not pervert justice.
Do not spread false reports. Do not be a malicious witness for a wicked man. Do not fear false. Do not bear false witness. False witness.
Mm-hmm.
And I have four more, but I won't say them. Unless you want me to.
It's interesting that.
Okay. Follow the crowd and do evil.
Okay. What were you going to say, Melody?
Do not show favoritism towards a poor person in a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because they're poor doesn't mean that they're in the right, you know. I thought that was interesting.
And do not deny justice to the poor.
Right.
Do not take bribes.
My translation also said, don't follow the crowd and do wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about that. these riots. Somebody's following somebody in the crowd. They're getting them riled up, and they're not looking at, is this a true thing to happen or not? You know, they just get built up in the emotion of it all.
Right. I don't like what happened, so it's okay to, you know, commit arson, to burglarize, to blockade streets. Good. All right. There's also in verses 6 through 8, it says, God says, I will not acquit the wicked. He has told them back in the Pentateuch, hey, if you subvert justice, I will not acquit you. So you're going to face justice and you're not going to get off, which is exactly what's happening. What did he say about bribes in the rest of that Exodus passage?
Do not accept them.
Right. Right. And that was one of the accusations in Amos that we read, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That were listed. All right. So why is, we've talked about question 8 about, you know, why is the oppression of the poor a problem? Because it can widen the chasm between rich and poor, creates class envy, civil unrest. All right. So starting with verse 11, B and C, what is going to happen to the rich people?
They will not dwell in their fancy houses.
Mm-hmm.
Nor will they get to go back to their vineyards or have their wine.
Yeah, good. All right, so in the middle of this whole section, Amos inserts verses 8 and 9. Which is, he who made the Pleiades and Orion and turns deep darkness into the morning and the darkness into day into night, who calls for the waters of the sea and pours them out on the surface of the earth. So what's God reminding the Israelites of?
He's the creator.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the ultimate judge.
Yes.
And he says, the Lord is my name. The Lord is his name. He even tells them.
So what did you think about what Amos meant in 5:13? Therefore, he who is prudent will keep silent in such a time, for it is an evil time. That's the NIV.
First, I thought, I guess from my note in the end, I read it, it meant there wasn't any point in speaking up. But then I looked at the Living Bible, and it says, therefore, those who are wise will not try to interfere with the Lord in the dread day of your punishment.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's saying the Lord's decided to do this, so, you know, don't try to do anything.
Good. Anybody else have other answers?
It's in the ESV. Go ahead.
Kathy, what were you going to say?
I think it must have been in the ESV. It says the times will be so bad that the truth will not be tolerated.
Right. That's what I was going to say.
Okay. Sorry.
Tolerance. No, that's good. That's good.
Good answer, too.
Good. Good.
Makes me think about today.
I was going to say that we could see that today.
Yes. Whoever says there's nothing in the Old Testament that's relevant for today, they've never read the Old Testament.
Haven't read Amos, so then see us right there.
There you go. All right, verses 14 through 15. What is the admonition from God there? And if the Israelites heed his word, what will he do?
But seek God and not evil, and so that you may live.
And he will be with you.
Okay. Yep.
Hate evil, love good, establish justice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put down, and I underline this, it may be that the Lord will be gracious to the remnant of Joseph.
Right.
I got that may too, Barbara.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. So why would this be alarming?
I would think that they might think that they had pushed a little too far. And that even if they change, it may be too late.
Mm-hmm. So even if the whole nation changes, who might it benefit?
Those who still follow God's laws, the remnant.
The remnant, yeah. That's got to be a little disconcerting. So I'm a rich person. I may or may not be in the remnant. Probably not. Because they're not likely to turn back to God. All right. So in verses 16 through 17, we finally get to, you know, the funeral dirge part of this. So how do those verses describe a funeral?
Wailing in the streets, cries of anguish in every public square, farmers summoned to weep, mourners to wail, and wailing in the vineyards.
Yep. Good.
I love that verse. It says, those who are skilled in lamentation, like that's what they do regularly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Continuously.
Paid mourners, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've seen some of the funerals in New Orleans, you know, where they're parading mm-hmm. down the streets, a lot of times those are paid mourners that are hired to do that. But it is very cultural in the Middle East to hire people to do that. Okay, now we start with the day of the Lord in verse 18. So what was this day supposed to be like according to Joel?
That God would pour out his spirit to all the people. Let's see. Sons and daughters will prophesy. Old men dream dreams. Old men dream. Young men. Visions, wonders in heaven, blood and fire, blood and fire, columns of smoke, the sun will turn dark, the moon blood red, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. There will be a remnant of survivors.
Sure.
And all this includes the servants too.
Mm-hmm. So Joel paints kind of a mixed picture, doesn't he? All this good stuff. And so, you know, kind of like we read in chapter 2 of Amos, we're sitting here fat, dumb, and happy. So if I just heard, you know, Joel's message, I'm thinking, oh, the day of the Lord's going to be wonderful. And then Joel hits them, gives them the smackdown. Well, here, let me tell you what else is going to happen. So how is it described in Amos?
Mm-hmm.
Darkness, not light. If a man fled from a lion, a bear met him. There's just no getting away.
Right. Good.
Judgment of the unfaithful.
Yeah. Well, hey, Janet.
I'm sorry, Michelle.
Didn't see you sneak in there.
I did. I'm so sorry.
No,
I'm
that's
be
fine.
Next
no
Monday,
worries.
So.
No worries.
Well, it's interesting. I like that it said, the visual of this pitch dark without a ray of brightness.
Mm-hmm. And I also, in one of the translations, probably a more living translation, you escape, if you escape from the bear, and the man leans against a wall in his house, and he'll get bitten by a snake.
No,
it's not a good day.
Not a good day. Yep. All right. So I had you compare Amos's writings about the day of the Lord, which are a little brief, with Revelation 16. What did you notice in Revelation 16?
Well, the destruction of the first heaven and earth.
I mean, everything turns to blood, so they can't, you know, what do they eat? What do they drink? Everything dies.
Mm-hmm.
No mountains. There's no islands.
Yep.
To me, it was similar to the Egyptians when God had Moses take them out of Egypt, the plagues, and also the angels poured out seven bowls containing God's wrath, which reminded me a lot of that time.
Good connection. So, you know, it's, you know, we read the book of Revelation and we read John's vision of what's going to happen, and it's very consistent with Amos and Joel.
Mm-hmm.
Revelation actually goes into a little bit more detail, so that lends some credibility when we connect the dots of these three books as to what's going to happen at the second coming. All right, moving on to Amos 21 through 23 and 26, what's God's attitude towards Israel's worship?
God despises their feasts and assemblies, and he's not going to accept their offerings.
Mm-hmm.
Because their hearts aren't right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They're noisy hymns of praise.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody have a version that explains the Kuth and Kiyun?
Yeah. Are those? Wait, I have to.
It depends on which translation you use.
Right.
The ESV does. The first one, how did you say it?
The Sukkoth,
that was the deity of a Assyrian people.
Mm-hmm.
Associated with the planet Saturn. And then Kiyun is the Babylonian term for Saturn.
And some translations also say that it refers to star deities too. So both would be correct there. So they're violating the second commandment, aren't they? And we already knew that, right? Since they were worshiping the golden cows at Bethel and Dan. So now that, you know, we've progressed, not only are we worshiping the golden calves, but now we're worshiping those gods of the earth and the stars. All right, so in 524, what does God instruct the Israelites to do, and why is that more important than worship? And I suggested that you read Psalm 15 for context.
I wrote that, let justice roll on like a river and righteousness like a never-failing stream, and it's because people who do these things will never be shaken.
Mm-hmm. And what does that mean, they will never be shaken?
Meaning if you are hanging on to true justice and that you're hanging on to seeking righteousness, that those are two things you're focused on and those are the prime things that you're going to hang on to, then you can't be shaken to the core. If you stand for truth and you stand for justice, you're not going to be easily swayed. And the same if you're seeking God's righteousness, you're not going to easily be swayed or shaken either. It's like the streams, you know, in Psalm 1, the stream that's planted by the river and has the long, deep roots, a storm can come along and it can't knock you over because you're clinging onto the things of God.
Good. Good. So you won't be swayed to fall into the trap of idol worship, will you?
Right.
Good. All right. So 525 seems a little confusing. He says, did you bring to me sacrifices and offerings during the 40 years in the wilderness, O house of Israel? So when did the Israelites make their sacrifices according to Deuteronomy 12?
I put down when the Lord told them to.
Okay.
Where and when and how.
Yep.
And they should do it, quote, before the Lord your God.
Good.
Not before anybody else or anything else.
So this is a rhetorical question. So if the answer to this is no, you didn't bring me sacrifices and offerings while you are in the wilderness, what do you think is the point of asking this rhetorical question? And I gave you Exodus 19:5 for context.
Well, the Exodus passage was talking about God's covenant, and it says, if you obey me and keep my commands, you will be my treasured possession, not if you make sacrifices.
Right.
You make sacrifices if he asks you to, but the key to the covenant is that you're obeying him.
Good. Yeah, before we got to the sacrificial system, what 10 things had God given the Israelites?
Commandments.
10 commandments, yeah. And it was all about obedience, wasn't it? Do this, do not do this. Good. All right, in 527, what is Israelite punishment going to be? And we get to see it one more time.
Exile.
Yeah. And you saw it happened in 2 Kings 17:6. That was the fulfillment of the prophecy. And we've looked at that verse before. Good job. Y'all did a really good job on this one. Any questions? Okay. Let me get my lecture notes up. Okay, so a lament is a passionate expression of grief and sorrow over the loss of a person or thing, and we think of laments in the context of a funeral or the Book of Lamentations, and Lamentations is an entire book in the Bible which contains a series of laments over the destruction of Jerusalem in 586 B.C., and I found this wonderful, wonderful painting by Rembrandt of Jeremiah lamenting the fall of Jerusalem. So can you just picture him with his thoughts? And then he puts them to paper and we get the Book of Lamentations. So why is Amos 5 a lament? It's grief over death of the northern kingdom, which seems incongruous to the Israelites when the nation appeared to be so prosperous and so religious. And Amos is mourning the death of the very people he's addressing. And remember that in Amos 4, God has declared he is done with Israel and has pronounced judgment on them, death, destruction, and exile at the hands of the Assyrians. and only a tenth of the troops who march out into battle will survive. So what a shock for such a strong army to suffer such a grave defeat. Everywhere in cities and vineyards and farms, there will be weeping and anguish over the destruction to come. So many will die, but there will not be enough professional mourners available to mourn the dead. Farmers will have to be recruited to serve as mourners. And God is going to pass through their midst. This is not a good thing. Unlike God's presence among the people in the Holy of Holies, God will be coming among them as the angel of death. And we are reminded of Exodus 12:12. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. In Amos 5, verses 4 through 6, God again exhorts the Israelites to seek him and live. He reminds them not to go to Bethel, Gilgal, or Beersheba to worship. They will not find God there. If they turn back to the Lord, they will live. But as we learn this week from Amos 5:15, we see that only the remnant of those who survive the Assyrians will have this opportunity. Further, Amos reminds the people of Israel that exile awaits them and that their shrine at Bethel will be destroyed. It will become nothing. It's interesting that Amos includes Beersheba in this list of worship places. Beersheba is in Judah, so it must have become a place of idolatry also by this point in Judah's history. Why did God exhort the Israelites to seek him? God gives life. This is the only way to experience spiritual blessing from God. Idols and worship for show can never provide this, and judgment is coming. Amos verses 8 through 9 in chapter 5 form the second doxology in the book. In this doxology, it extols God's attributes as creator and destroyer. He created the stars. He who created light from darkness controls the alternation of day and night every single day. He pulls water from the sea, the tides, onto the earth. And he can destroy what he created on his command. Pagans worshiped heavenly bodies. Jews could worship the God who created them. And the dual references to darkness and to destruction foreshadow verses 18 through 20, which describe the day of the Lord. In verses 10, 12, and 15, we see that God has observed the events happening at the city gates. The city gates were the location of public legal hearings and where justice was administered. Deuteronomy 21, 18 through 21, and Joshua 20, 1 through 4 give us two examples, and Isaiah 29, 21 adds clarity to what was now happening in Amos' day. So here is Deuteronomy 21. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him, will not listen to them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gate of the place where he lives, and they shall say to the elders of his city, "This is our son. He's stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard." Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear. And Joshua 20. Then the Lord said to Joshua, say to the people of Israel, appoint the cities of refuge of which I spoke to you through Moses, that the manslayer who strikes any person without intent or unknowingly may flee there. They shall be for you a refuge from the avenger of blood. He shall flee to one of these cities and shall stand at the entrance of the gate of the city and explain his case to the elders of that city. Then they shall take him into the city and give him a place, and he shall remain within. And Isaiah 29:21 says, who by a word make a man out to be an offender and lay a snare for him who reproves in the gate, and with an empty plea, turn aside him who is in the right. And here is a great picture of Et Tel Gesher, which was originally in the tribe of East Manasseh. It's now in the Golan Heights. And so remember we talked about city gates being multiple sections. And so the judges would sit in between the city walls. So that would be where the court of justice was. So Amos pleads for social justice, comes through loud and clear. He pleads for an end to the exploitation of the poor at the hands of the wealthy and those in power. All through verses 10 through 15, the Israelites are exhorted to seek good and not evil. They are called upon to administer justice fairly to everyone, rich or poor, and perhaps then God will be merciful upon the remnant. Amos 5:13 says, therefore the prudent man keeps quiet in such times, for the times are evil. And this has been interpreted differently by scholars. A prudent man keeps quiet because he knows he cannot change what is happening. He awaits God's judgment upon those who are evil. Or is it Proverbs 9:8? Do not reprove a scoffer or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man and he will love you. Perhaps a prudent man does not question God's actions. Lastly, it could be that a prudent man remains silent and mourns the evil times and the pending judgment. Amos 5:14b contains more of Amos' subtle irony. And so the Lord, the God of hosts, will be with you as you have said. All the Israelites, both in Israel and Judah, believed that the Lord would be with them. They held in their hearts verses like Deuteronomy 20:3-4. Hear, O Israel, today you are drawing near for battle against your enemies. Let not your heart faint. Do not fear or panic or be in dread for them, for the Lord your God is he who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies, to give you the victory. Neither nation wanted to contemplate that God would turn his back on them and let them be utterly destroyed. They were God's chosen people. And the prophet Micah put it well in Micah 3:11c. Yet they lean on the Lord and say, is not the Lord in the midst of us? No disaster shall come upon us. The expression, the day of the Lord, first makes its appearance in the Bible in the book of Amos. Scholars have studied it extensively and tried to understand its origins. A deity's intervention on behalf of his own nation was a common motif throughout the Middle East, according to Manfred Weifert. By the time of Amos' prophecies, the term meant a time or a period when the Lord would appear to render judgment and destroy his enemies. In this case, the enemies of his chosen people. Amos turns this common understanding on its head when he says in Amos 5:18, woe to you who desire the day of the Lord. Why would you have the day of the Lord? It is darkness and not light. The Israelites eagerly awaited the day of judgment against their enemies. Amos says that there will be a day of judgment, but against Israel, who is now counted among the Lord's enemies. Amos gives three descriptions of the day of the Lord: a day of despair and mourning, a day of darkness, and a day of doom. And we see a similar description in John's vision as expressed in Revelation 16. Amos uses a painful example to describe the plight of the people on the day of the Lord. They will flee from a lion only to encounter a bear. After escaping the bear, they will arrive safely at home only to be bitten by a serpent. In essence, there is no escape from God's wrath. Israel under Jeroboam II may feel supremely secure, but the day of the Lord will be deadly. And here is a wonderful painting by John Martin that hangs in the Tate Galleries in London, and he calls this the end of the world, also known as the great day of his wrath. And I thought that was just a stunning picture of what's going to happen. It shows a little bit like from Revelation, where it talks about people being crushed by the rocks. But here we also see the clouds and the darkness and, you know, the boiling oceans. And it's a pretty amazing picture. We conclude with a look at Amos 5:25. And here's another one of those great paintings from the Coptic Orthodox Church. Amos 5:25 asks, "Did you bring to me sacrifices and offerings during the 40 years in the wilderness, O house of Israel?" This is meant to be a rhetorical question, and the purpose is to contrast cultic rituals with what the Lord expects from his people, their love and obedience. "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might," Deuteronomy 6:5. "Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." Exodus 19:5-6. Jeremiah 7:22-23 suggests that Israel did not engage in ritual activity during the wilderness period. Here's that passage. "For in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt, I did not speak to your fathers or command them concerning burnt offerings and sacrifices. But this command I gave them, obey my voice, and I will be your God, and you shall be my people, and walk in all the way that I command you, that it may be well with you." Certainly, Moses issued prescriptions for ritual activity, but they all may not have come into effect until the entry into the promised land. We know from the book of Joshua that the Israelites had not celebrated circumcision or the Passover during the 40 years of the sojourn in the wilderness. The Israelites may have had access to the necessary animals for sacrifice while in the wilderness, but the birds and agricultural products were most likely lacking. Any questions? Crickets.
I'm just like, I need some hope.
You need some hope?
See some all this gloom.
Your hope is in the Lord. You know, that's why God had to send his son, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and just shows you, and it's real easy for us to become like any of the Israelites in the time of Amos if we're not careful and guard ourselves and what are we worshiping.
Yeah.
So very convicting.
Yeah. It is. All right, Janet, you coming back on Monday and you'll have all the answers?
No, I'm going to be out of town. That's why.
Okay. Just teasing. All right. Well, you're halfway through, y'all. Downhill slide straight into exile.